Chapter 39. Charles the Great. Charlemagne. His Wars. From Paradise on, an uninterrupted war between Christ and Satan is being waged here on earth. At that time, God himself spoke, "I will put enmity." This conflict has been going on already for centuries, and it shall continue till the last day. Only then, and not before, shall that struggle come to an end. The devil knows that he shall lose that struggle. Yea, even more, the devil knows that he has already lost that struggle. When the Lord Jesus cried out upon Golgotha, "It is finished," the devil had to flee tremblingly. But in spite of all that, the devil continues to fight unrelentingly. Time and again, the prince of darkness attacks the church of God. Time and again, the devil tries to wipe the Lord's church from off the earth. But he loses out all the time. His infernal plans fail continually, so that being defeated, he must always withdraw, because God's church cannot be destroyed. The Lord shall take care of that. Although the prince of darkness is mighty, yet happily he is not almighty. Whatever he may devise, whether by craftiness or brute force, it is all destined to failure. But still he does not give it up, but fights on stubbornly until the dreadful end comes for him. The devil uses people for his terrible work, wicked men who fight their entire life against God and his church. Often he also uses outward professors of religion who are either conscious or unconscious instruments in the hands of Satan. But the Lord also uses people who, as means in God's hand, protect his church. Now the Lord is always one step ahead of the devil. The prince of darkness always comes too late. God's government continues. In spite of the many attacks of the prince of darkness, the golden thread of God's authority cannot be broken. The devil does attempt it, but he is never successful. If he was, then God would no longer be God. I wrote this part purposely because we related to you in the previous chapter how Christianity came into the European countries. No, that did not happen by itself. God wanted to plant his church in those countries. The devil tried to prevent that. The conflict between paganism and Christianity has raged there for many centuries. Thereby, streams of blood have been shed. But Christianity was finally victorious. God's church came there. Why? Because it was God's will. And who has ever withstood God's will? The Lord sent his servants, the missionaries. We already told you about the Irish missionaries, those heroes from Ireland. We spoke about the Frankish missionaries who had to overcome a twofold enmity. We have discussed about Willibrord and Boniface. There have been many more. We could not tell about them all. They were instruments in God's hand to build his church. But the devil used the pagan Saxons and the savage Frisians to stop, if possible, the work of God. At times it seemed as if the church of the Lord would be destroyed. But in spite of that fierce opposition, that tender plant of God's church grew. It grew, but it went, oh, so slow. Even in 754, Boniface and his assistants were killed at Dokkum. With the greatest difficulty, the church could keep herself standing against the repeated attacks of the pagan nations. Then the moment came when the Lord said, "Hitherto and no further." In 768, hence 14 years after the horrible murder of Boniface, a new king ascended the throne of the Frankish realm. That king would be used by the Lord to make that tender plant of God's church into a vigorous tree. With this I mean that the power of paganism would be broken by that king. Those pagan people would also bend the knee before the Christ of the Scripture. The name of that new king was Charlemagne, also known as Charles the Great. He has ruled more than 40 years. God wanted to use him to protect and extend Christianity. He was a wheel in that great clockwork of God. As in a watch, many small wheels rotate to make the timepiece run, and not one of those small wheels can be spared. Thus was Charlemagne also such a small wheel which could not be spared. Well then, in this chapter, we shall tell you about Charlemagne. While murdering and plundering, an army marches through the land of the Frisians. Churches go up in flames, so that only smoking heaps of rubble are left. While sparing nothing, the hostile soldiers force their way into the monasteries. Without pity, kill the monks that are present, take everything along which they can use, and when they finally depart, they set fire to the buildings. While destroying everything, the army advances from place to place. The blood flows in streams. Poor Christians, who shall help them? But behold, a mighty army is already rushing to their aid. Its commander is a powerful man, bigger than most of the soldiers. His shoulders are broad and heavy. His entire bearing marks authority. Undauntedly, he and his brave warriors cast themselves upon the murdering and plundering intruders. His soldiers follow their courageous commander. The struggle is terrible. The shouting of the warriors resounds far and wide. The clashing of arms fills the air. Finally, the pagan army withdraws and takes to flight in wild disorder, leaving their many dead behind. The Christians who have escaped the massacre may now again commence to rebuild the destroyed churches and monasteries. Who are those intruders? They are the Saxons, who dwell in the east of the Netherlands and in Germany. Their king and their commander is the pagan King Widukind. When Willibrord and Boniface, the two Anglo-Saxon missionaries, preached in the Netherlands, the Frisians under King Radbod were the greatest enemies of Christianity. But after the violent death of Boniface, the Frisians have gradually accepted Christianity. Hence, danger no longer threatened from that quarter. Now, the Saxons, under their King Widukind, are the greatest enemies of Christianity. Widukind wants to persecute and destroy Christianity with fire and sword. For that reason, he undertakes raids in the land of the Frisians. For that reason, neither churches nor monasteries are spared. For that reason, the blood flows in streams. Wittekind has only one object, annihilation. But happily, now a king of the Franks has come who is able to drive back the plundering armies of the Saxons. That king is Charlemagne. He is the powerful protector of the cruelly and ruthlessly persecuted Christians. With his army, he hastens to the assistance of the oppressed Christians. Charlemagne had become king just in time. In the year 768, he ascended the Frankish throne, and only 4 years later, his war already commenced with the Saxon people. We just told you that they were soon repulsed out of the land of the Frisians. But any moment they could return with stronger armies to avenge the suffered defeat. Those Saxons remained a threatening danger to the Church of God. Charlemagne realized that too. For that reason, he did not satisfy himself with the obtained victory, but marches with his powerful army and soon invaded the land of the Saxons itself. They not only had to be driven out of the land of the Frisians, but that people had to be made harmless. Time after time, the Saxon armies were defeated, and finally they had to submit themselves. However, Wittekind, their king, did not subject himself. He fled to the extreme north, to the land of the Danes. The Saxons promised Charlemagne that they would obey him and would leave the Christians alone. That which Charlemagne had done up to now was right. He had to wield the sword to protect God's church. That is the task of the government. But after that, Charlemagne did something which was not right. Instead of sending missionaries who would bring the gospel there, he began to compel the Saxons to accept Christianity. Charlemagne began to spread Christianity with the sword. And you see, that was not in order, or rather, that was absolutely wrong. God's Spirit must convert people. The sword cannot do that. The Lord spoke at one time, not by might, nor by power, but by my Spirit, saith the Lord of hosts. And thus it is, too. To be sure, Charlemagne's intentions were good, but the means which he used were entirely wrong. Although thereby the Saxons became Christians outwardly, yet they only subjected themselves hypocritically, and in their hearts they remained pagans. When Charlemagne had subdued the Saxons and had regulated all things there, he marched with his soldiers to the south, to Italy. As we already told you before, the Lombards dwelled there. The Pope had gotten into trouble with them and was now menaced by them. In that distress, the Pope called for the help of Charlemagne. For that reason, Charlemagne went to the sunny south as soon as possible. The rumor that Charlemagne had departed with his army soon penetrated to the north, where Wittekind had found a safe hiding place. He made grateful use of that opportunity. He hastened back to his country and people and called the Saxons to arms again. This call was answered. The Saxons broke their promise and revolted against the Franks. Hence, the war broke out again in all its violence. But as yet, they did not know Charlemagne. The renewed rebellion had scarcely reached his ears, or he hastened to help. In an unbelievably short time, he He was present again in the land of the Saxons, and they were defeated again. Just as at the first time, King Widukind fled to the Danes again. Through that fast interference of Charlemagne, his attempt failed completely. For the second time, the Saxons promised obedience to the mighty king of the Franks. To prevent a repetition of the rebellion, he issued a number of laws, and at the same time, these served as a protection of Christianity. In one of those laws, it was written that whosoever caused a rebellion would be put to death. Human sacrifices were forbidden upon pain of death. Dead bodies were no longer permitted to be burned in a pagan manner, but had to be buried. Besides, robbing and damaging churches and monasteries was punishable with death. Finally, the obligation was laid upon all Saxons that they had to have themselves baptized. Charlemagne thought, "That's it. Now the Saxons will not dare to rebel against me again." With a peaceful mind, he marched back to Italy again. But he was mistaken. Charlemagne and his army had no sooner departed, or Widukind returned, and for the second time he succeeded to move the Saxons to defection. They broke their promise anew and rebelled again. Upon hearing that, Charlemagne hastily left Italy and hastened as fast as he could to the rebellious Saxons. They had to subject themselves and promised loyalty for the third time. He left their country with his victorious army, and this time he marched to Spain to fight against the Moors, who wrought havoc in that place. However, a part of his army was defeated. As soon as the Saxons heard that, they broke their promise for the third time. Churches and monasteries were destroyed again. Streams of blood flowed again. Charlemagne was furious when he heard that. Now his patience was exhausted. He decided to punish the Saxons severely for their unfaithfulness. He will now cure them of that. A stop had to be put to that. They could not hold out against his mighty army. The Saxons fought desperately, also for fear of punishment. But their heroism did not avail. They were defeated. Charlemagne gained a magnificent victory. Charlemagne took revenge. Near the little town of Verden, which was situated close to the present city of Bremen, he had 4,500 rebellious Saxons beheaded in one day. That was cruel. From this it appears plainly that the battle was being carried on with great cruelty from both sides. The rumor of that terrible massacre was soon known throughout the entire Saxon country. Their bitterness knew no bounds. A terrible general rebellion broke out. All took up arms. They fought with contempt of death, but the Saxon armies were repulsed with much bloodshed. Charlemagne was victorious, and the Saxons proffered their submission again. Yet, the war was not finished with that. The Saxons did not as yet want to submit, and when they saw their opportunity, war broke out again after so many times. The king of the Franks realized that in this manner there would never come an end to the struggle. For that reason, he now took measures which had to help. He had 10,000 families conveyed out of their country. They were brought over to the Frankish Empire, and there they were dispersed everywhere. Indeed, this last remedy proved to be effectual. Now the Saxons could no more do anything. Widukind, the Saxon king, now realized that he could no more begin anything, and finally he also gave up the fight. He had himself baptized in the year 785. With that, an end had come to that war of many years. Charlemagne not only conveyed 10,000 Saxon families to the country of the Franks, but vice versa, he also had many Frankish families moved to the country of the Saxons. He mingled those people with each other. With this, he did the same thing which formerly the eastern rulers had already done. We read of many instances of this in the Bible. I shall mention one instance. When the nation of the 10 tribes was carried into captivity, strange people came to live in the land of Israel. From this the Samaritans originated, did they not? Thus many more instances may be mentioned. By this wise measure, Charlemagne achieved his object. The Saxons, who had moved to the Frankish Empire, now lived scattered among the Christians. The Saxons, who had remained in their country, also came to live among the Christians, because thousands of Franks obtained a dwelling place there. Charlemagne had churches and monasteries built for those Franks. There were many churches and monasteries throughout the country of Saxony. The Saxons also simply followed the example of their king Widukind and had themselves baptized. Christianity has also conquered here, and paganism had to finally give up the conflict. Christianity was not only threatened by the Saxons. Oh no, the enemy lay in wait from all sides. Charlemagne had to go and fight everywhere. He had to fight against his adversaries, now in the north, then in the south, and then again in the east. During his long reign, Charlemagne has undertaken 53 campaigns altogether. Naturally, it is not possible to tell in detail about all those campaigns, because then I would never get done, and besides, that is not necessary for our purpose. I shall briefly discuss only 2. In the south of Italy dwelled the Lombards. They were also mortal enemies of Charlemagne. Charlemagne himself had been the cause of that. He deserved it. Do you want to know in what way? Charlemagne was married to a daughter of the king of the Lombards. The name of this king was Desiderius. Through this marriage, he had become the father-in-law of Charlemagne. However, no children were born out of this marriage. This was a great disappointment to Charlemagne. He had fervently hoped for a son, who later could become his successor as king of the Franks. But that hope was not fulfilled. Strangers would have to carry on his work. He could not endure that. And do you know what he did then? He sent his wife away. He told her, "You must go back to your father again." Soon after that, he married another woman. Of course, that way of acting by Charlemagne was sinful, yea, wicked. He was not permitted to send his wife away for that reason. That is forbidden in God's word. Therefore, when the daughter of Desiderius returned as an outcast to his house, He resented that greatly of Charlemagne. We can understand that, isn't that so? That insult done to his daughter caused a grudge with him. Out of revenge, he invaded the territory of the Pope. Now you must know that the Pope had an extensive territory in Italy over which he ruled. This they called the Papal States. Hence the Pope was not only an ecclesiastical prince, but also a worldly prince. The army of the Pope was much weaker than the army of the Lombards. The papal troops had to yield to the superior forces. While plundering, Desiderius and his soldiers marched through the papal country. Even Rome, the capital, came into serious danger. In this way, it would not be long, or the Pope would be driven out of his country. For that reason, he immediately sent a message to Charlemagne. "Please help me," he implored. Immediately, Charlemagne and his mighty army marched into Italy. And yea, Desiderius was no match for Charlemagne. His army was defeated, and himself was made prisoner. Charlemagne shut him up in a monastery. Now then, he could no longer do any harm. Soon the Lombards were driven from the papal territory. However, this history remains a black page in the life of Charlemagne, because he himself was the cause of all that misery. We can imagine that the Pope was very thankful to Charlemagne for his assistance. He had to thank the King of the Franks that he was not driven from home and hearth. We told you in chapter 34 that the Mohammedans had crossed from Africa over the Strait of Gibraltar into Spain. After that, all of Spain was conquered by them. Afterward, they marched over the Pyrenees and invaded France. It seemed that also there, their march was not to be stopped. Victoriously, they marched from city to city. They had already advanced close to Paris. It seemed as if France would also be overrun by them. But we also told you in that chapter that they were repulsed by Charles Martel. You still know that, don't you? Well then, those Mohammedans, also at times called Moors, tried time and again to re-enter France and to reconquer the lost territory. They remained a threatening danger for the church in the Netherlands. Charlemagne also had to fight fiercely and repeatedly against those intruding Moors. Time and again, bloody battles were fought there. Sometimes Charlemagne's troops suffered defeat there, and then he personally had to save the situation with his main army. But finally, he was successful in repulsing the Mohammedans. They were even pushed back by Charlemagne beyond the Ebro. This river flows through the north of Spain. Thus, in the south, Charlemagne had to protect Christianity time and again against the advancing Moors. If their object had been achieved, then God's church in the west would have been destroyed, even as the Christian church in the east. Charlemagne did not have an easy life. It was a life full of trouble and strife. But God wanted to use him to preserve his church from destruction. Do you now see that Charlemagne also had a place in the great clockwork of God?